Hey friends, this is Mother Natalia, and we have a very exciting announcement for you. We are in celebration of our upcoming 200th episode. We'd like to put together a video including a bunch of you. So what we're asking is for you to send a 20 to 30 second video or audio if you're not comfortable with that. Sharing just some of the fruit that this podcast has borne in your life that you think it would be good to share with other listeners.
We're asking you then to send us this video or audio clip by uploading it to Google Drive and then sharing it with our friend who is putting the video together. His name is David Bratnick. So upload to Google Drive and then share it with dbratnick@gmail.com. And we're going to ask you to have these submissions in by March 18th.
The video can be filmed either vertically or horizontally. David just asks that you try to record it in a relatively quiet area for easier editing. Also, we recorded this way after we recorded this week's episode. So whatever time we give for the hashtag banner haters in the intro is just totally incorrect, and you'll want to add this onto it.
Hello, dear ones. You're listening to the What God Is Not podcast with Father Michael O'Loughlin and Mother Natalia.
Hey, friends. This is Mother Natalia. Today's episode was supposed to be mine, but Father Michael was supposed to be mine. But Father Michael is amazing and pinch-hitted for me because I have a migraine. Words are really hard. Anyways, so today he talks about two different topics. He shares some reflections that he had about the feast of the encounter of our Lord with Simeon and Anna, and how his own reflections were added to by some others in a beautifully humbling moment for him. And then he goes on to kind of open up a discussion about creative acts of almsgiving and how we can be attentive to the needs of others in fun and creative and simple ways. So if you are a hashtag banter hater, you're going to want to skip ahead about 9 minutes to timestamp 9:25.
Glory to Jesus Christ.
Glory to him forever.
When you were a kid, growing up with, thank God, both parents like I did, did you ever, or you don't even need both parents for this scenario I'm setting up for you, did you ever realize that one of your parents was sick or exhausted or just not in the mood and use that to get your way about something?
That doesn't really seem like something I would do. Probably, though.
You're right. It probably doesn't. But when you, maybe when you were young.
Maybe. And yeah, maybe. Like, I'm not thinking, I can't think of a specific instance, but I feel like all
like,
kids
so my
do
dad,
that, so probably.
My dad listens to this podcast with my mom sometimes, so I got to be careful. But he knows I've made fun of him about this before. So my dad, when my mom would be gone, my mom was definitely the family cook. And my dad wasn't. But so when he was like, my mom was gone and he was cooking for the night, it was always the same thing, which is really funny because that's what now I make. So I make like the stuff, uncomplicated stuff like French toast, macaroni and cheese and hot dogs, you know, things like this. Sorry, there's LA happening behind me.
LA.
But so one night, I remember there was probably three of us at the time. There's five of us now, five kids in the family. We were young. And one night we asked my dad for if we could have Oreos for dessert. And he says, yes, you can have one. And so I don't know what that was. My emergency phone.
That was a weird
yes,
noise.
Oh. You can have, it's my new, I have to have an Android now, which I don't like, but I have it for my emergency phone. podcasting, it's alerting me to podcasting. So basically,
that's weird because we were supposed to start podcasting half an hour ago.
I know everything's wrong with this phone except the fact that it takes calls and texts. That's the only reason I want it. So I said, we say, can you have some Oreos? Now, I didn't realize he must have been in a weird mood that night or frustrated by something or whatever. So he says, yes, you can have one. So then we eat one, and of course that's not enough. So we say, Dad, can we have another Oreo? And he goes, and a little bit like, yes, you can have a second Oreo. We go, thanks. We take
basically
it.
Basically, like, leave me alone. Just
exactly. And I look over at Sean, and I remember thinking, like, we can get him. He's in a place. And so I said, Dad, can we have a third Oreo? And he's like, you know what? Just have the whole box. And he put the whole box in front of us. And I was like, yes. So
did you feel bad afterwards?
I need to be like reminded to take these things to confession. Honestly, I don't think I ever brought that to confession because I was so young. I should probably bring that to confession. I don't mean to like the priest to laugh at me for bringing something like that, but it was just true. Like these things, you could bring up these things that you remember from your childhood later in life in confession. So anyway, I'm saying all of this because you have a migraine and I'm trying to
not take
figure out a way
that.
To use this.
Oh, the opposite. To the okay.
to use this for general
you can.
Hilarity.
I mean, I have there when there is a migraine, there is no filter, right? It's what, real bad.
I say this to our listener because right before we went on, she said it may be my what'd you call it? My migraine no filter.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like,
and then I said just, something with no filter.
No filter. And I was like, "Yep, we're not saying that." So,
yeah, we are definitely
so
not
Steve,
saying that on this podcast.
Steve, get ready. We may need some edits this time. We may really need some edits this time.
I was like the opposite of that kid. I feel like no, that's not true. I talk about my childhood as though I was this perfect kid, but I'm sure I played my parents and I had meltdowns and I did all the things. But I do remember that when my mom had back surgery and so she was totally out of commission and my dad had to like make our lunches and stuff. And my brother loved it. And I just came home and tattled and I was like, Mom, Dad is sending us like he's sending us to school with popcorn and cookies and Pop-Tarts and or whatever it was, you know. And
you were one of those.
Oh, I was totally one of those, yeah. And my brother was so mad, and my dad was mad because I tattled on him, and everyone was just mad at me. It's just the story of my life. I'm just trying to do the right thing, and everyone hates me for it.
It'll serve you well as a bride of Christ and a nun in the world. It's funny because I joke about like being really like that, but I mean, I was the kid who decided that mom and dad, like when I discovered, I don't want to say this out loud, but I discovered that a long held belief of during a holiday that happens in December, a long held belief was not as accurate as my parents had told me when I was a kid, that I decided that, well, then my parents, like they don't, since they're the ones providing, you know what
everyone
I'm talking
knows
about.
What you mean. Yeah.
So, that I was, they didn't get stockings. So I literally, my mom taught us how to sew. So me and my brother sat down and sewed stockings one night with a babysitter. And then on the eve of this holiday, we went.
The eve of this holiday, we put stockings out.
We put stockings out. Like we literally got up and I was probably 5 and Sean was like 3. Actually, I was probably older than that because I had found out. So I was probably like 7 or 8. But I was like, and we put stockings, we put the stockings out and put little gifts in the stockings for my parents so that they would have presents.
That's so sweet.
They'd have stockings. So I was rarely trying to manipulate my parents. It was usually just like over love and worry that I was going to disappoint them in any way. And that's still to this day.
Yeah. No, I'm sure. Yeah. It's the same with me. Like mostly I just wanted to please them, but I'm sure I manipulated them. Yeah.
We got in a conversation last night around the Wednesday night fire pit about how some parents can be overprotective almost to the point where they don't trust you. Mm-hmm. And that's frustrating. And then, but somebody else at the fire pit, one person was saying, so one person got a call from mom, like, where are you? Because Wednesday nights always go really, really late. Mm-hmm. So when we got a call, where are you? And so somebody else was like, oh man, I get those calls all the time. And then somebody else says, I wish I got those calls. Mm-hmm. Like my mom really doesn't care where I am, like anytime, you know, these are all adults, by the way.
Yeah.
But I like, my mom really just doesn't care. And it was like, so we got into this conversation about what is basically, it can be harmful on both sides. If you don't feel mm-hmm. trusted, if you don't feel your parents trust you or your parents just don't care. you know, and it's not that they overtrust you, it's just they don't care. And finding that middle ground, because none of us were parents yet around that fire pit. But anyway,
can you tell on the squad cast screen, can you tell when I zone out? Like, could you tell that I just kind of zoned out while you were talking?
I would not have guessed that, no.
Okay.
If you said I zoned out a few times, I would have been like, yep, saw it. But I would not have like said, oh, she zoned out.
So. Okay.
All right. Well, since this may be a bit of a monologue with Mother Natalia zoning out and my
it's
promptings
for my,
to get...
my infallibly belayed podcast, which was a complete monologue. I recommended...
Stop being insecure. Stop.
No,
stop.
Listen.
Stop.
Okay.
Stop.
Okay. I'm ready. Let's do it.
If I can find a way of getting you to say something without the filter, I will do that. But in the meantime, I'm just going to start doing a podcast. You have the timestamp?
Yeah. Okay. I almost said, yeah, girl. You're
not there it is. There it is. Okay. So I want to start out the podcast I have in mind. So the next three episodes after this one are going to be very much focused on Holy Week and prayer. Mm-hmm. So I thought, what's a topic? Because I actually, when I was trying to come up with a topic, I brought my Chasislav over. And I was like, maybe we'll do something from the Chasislav or do a psalm. Or Chasislav, by the way, is our book of hours. And I was like, nope, the next three are going to be about that. Mm-hmm. So let's do something totally different. So I thought, well, okay.
Let's do something fun.
One of my favorite things to do, and this comes from my phlegmaticness and my sanguineness and my hatred. My hatred is a strong word. I have a great distaste for structure and ritual other than religious ritual. And like,
how
I hate having
friends?
A booked schedule for the week. I know. I hate it. So I love when the Great Fast comes along and I talk to my spiritual father and I say, basically, dear spiritual father, can you give me the bare minimum of all of the fasting regulations, and then I will run a bunch of creative things by you. Because if I'm fasting to the utmost, I feel that I don't have room for creative prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. I love being creative about it. So what I want to record on after my initial monologue here, I want to record and ask you about creative almsgiving, because this is something that now that we have Fotina, we've both been able to do a little bit, but I'm giving you a heads up because I want to talk about that. But I first want to talk about because it came up in our pre-recording banter. I want to talk about
it's
the
amazing
feast.
That we ever actually have banter when we record, because we always banter beforehand.
This is
except
this is
beforehand true. We banter without filter.
You know what we haven't done in a while? To our shame, we haven't right. brought on Fotina patrons to listen live.
I totally forgot that exists.
But what we need to do is when we do that, we can then you listeners can hear some of our pre-recording banter.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're gonna put that back into our Fotina Patreon.
Oh, Father Michael, we need to
Patreon
remember
thing.
That.
We do. We need to tell Rachel because she'll remember.
Okay.
So
I'm gonna message her right now while you're talking.
Do it. So basically what we said was that we were talking about mother having a headache. It's not a headache. What's it called? It's a bad headache. Monster headache. Migraine.
No, migraine. It's not a headache.
Sorry.
It's totally different than a headache.
Sorry, brain explosions.
Yeah.
Okay. mother having brain explosions. And so I forget what happened, but we were talking about... Okay, I've totally spaced the heart of what this was. But basically, I was saying there was something that I thought I had been insightful about. There was something I was preparing my homily for, the encounter of our Lord with Simeon and Anna, also known as, aka, the presentation of our Lord in the temple on February 2nd. And I was meditating upon, I want to preach on the prayer of Saint Ephraim. I'm sorry, the hymn of Saint Simeon, right? Now let your servant depart in peace, etc. And because I have this memorized because I sing it at baptisms and things like this. So I thought, well, let me reflect upon that and preach on the things that basically people have heard a million times, because I know people a lot of times like hearing an insight about something they've already known, already prayed, already seen, but something they've never thought about related to that. So I thought, well, okay, let me just pray about this. And I was going through the end of the hymn, and he says, namely Jesus will be the light of revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking, okay, the light of revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people Israel. So the light of revelation, I basically just thought, well, one something to look at with this is that most Gentiles, I mean, almost all Gentiles, that meant they were pagans, right? They had multiple gods. But as most of us know, the pagan deities were just really strong, really passions-driven, usually regarding sex, really strong, really passions-driven, basically humanoids. So they're a mix between gods and humans, or they're all gods, but they act like us if we had a lot of power and a lot of strength. So basically you didn't want them around. You don't want them around all the time. You may call upon them like the god of war if you were fighting in a war. But then when the war was done, you were like, I'm going to offer you a sacrifice. Please just stay out of my life, because if you're in my life, then you're going to just cause trouble because you're selfish and things like that. So the light of revelation of the Gentile was basically the light of revelation that what was revealed was the fact that we actually want our God around, and he actually wants us around. And we don't offer sacrifices to have him go away or to do what we want.
Sorry, did you say you just realized this? Like this just came when you were reflecting on it? Or
No. This is something I've known, but I preached when I wanted to preach on that line. This is the direction I took. Basically, this is the revelation to the Gentiles, among many other things, I'm sure, was that we actually want God around. Mm-hmm. And he wants us around.
We
he wants us in his life
God
for all eternity.
Personal. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's very different than what the Gentile pagans would have considered their role was with God.
Sure.
And then I thought, okay, what does it mean to be the glory of your people, Israel? And then I remembered something. Basically, the glory cloud was what filled the temple. Mm-hmm. So when the Israelites were walking through the desert, they would stop and you read that a cloud filled the tent. And they called this the glory cloud. And it was basically a sign that God was present there. Not in any real way, but the cloud was the sign of God's presence in some mystical way in the tent. So when they built the temple, then the cloud of glory filled the temple. And it was just a sign of God's affirmation for them. And so it dawned on me, and I thought, you know what? This is 40 days after the birth of the incarnate God. And I knew that temple had not had the glory cloud in hundreds of years. Hmm. So basically, the glory of the people of Israel, Jesus is literally God himself now in the temple. Hmm. And they had not had even the glory cloud in the temple for hundreds of years. Just how amazing that would have been, and a relief, because they also had not had a prophet. Mm-hmm. A prophet had not been a mouth, prophetes means a mouthpiece of God. They had not had a prophet in hundreds of years. And this was to the great shame of the people of the time, because they knew it was because of their disobedience and the fact that they killed all the prophets that they didn't have a prophet. They must have felt like God has given up on us. There's no glory cloud, there's no prophet. And, well, okay, I'll just start there. So those two things. And I realized we call Simeon and Anna prophets. Mm-hmm. Right? The prophet Simeon, the prophetess Anna, and Jesus is God. So right now, all in one feast, you have the prophets have returned. God has sent another prophet to the people, and the glory cloud is back, but it's not the glory cloud. It's literally it's God himself who is there present. And then I also said, and this is where my idiocy comes in. I also said, by the way, they also probably didn't have the full Ark of the Covenant. They may have had the Ark of the Covenant, but they didn't have what was inside of it. It had been sacked by the Babylonians, Assyrians, Greeks, Romans. So they basically probably didn't have the most precious things in the temple, but that's where I left it, right? And then I go on. So I'm thinking, like, what a beautiful insight about the prophets have returned. The glory has returned. And then the next day I go on Facebook and I'm scrolling, and some old lady that I don't know in person posts this exact thing. And she's like, The glory cloud has returned, the prophets have returned, and the Ark of the Covenant has returned because of Mary. And I'm like, oh my gosh. So anyway.
Amazing.
What I'm preaching, did you know about, had you ever heard that, those insights before? About all this feast being the return of all those things to the temple. No. So,
Shouldn't say I've never heard it. It doesn't sound familiar. So if I had heard it, I'd forgotten it.
So it's obviously a thing. I mean, unless this woman was just like, this old lady was just like, hey, I had an insight. But that's what it looked like. She was quoting somebody, like the way she had the post. Uh-huh. So I was like, oh man. So I was proud of myself for coming up with an insight that millions of people supposedly already had and was already a thing. But I was also just very inspired by that reality for this feast. This feast has never been like a major thing for me. It's like, okay, Jesus is brought to the temple on the 40th day. Usually my mind's already moving ahead to pre-Lent because we're already in pre-Lent most of the time, or in, you know, and into Lent, into the great fast. So anyway, so that was my humbling moment. So I actually, that was on what, Thursday? We had Thursday vigil, Friday feast. So on Sunday, I began the homily by just saying, I preached to all of you the other day about this. And I want to add the Ark of the Covenant. The Mother of God, since she bore God in her womb, is the Ark of the Covenant that bore God. So I just want to share that this is an added insight. And I think the Spirit put these things on my heart, but it obviously wasn't. It wasn't anything inventive. It was just the Spirit saying, by the way, preach on this, but this is already a thing. It reminds me
That's good for your humility.
It is. It is. I need more of that, Lord. I'm saying that with my worrying about the
stop.
Lighting.
Stop. You are just like one of the most humble people I know. Just stop.
Stop. You're ending that. You're ending it. You're making it a big
whatever. Okay. What were you going to say?
Vicious, vicious nun. So...
You are way too affirming and validating.
So it's almost like Sister Faustina, that Jesus had her in the Divine Mercy apparition say, Holy God, Holy Mighty One, Holy Immortal One, have mercy on us, which, of course, we've been doing for centuries and centuries before that. But it wasn't anything that Jesus is like revealing a new prayer. He's just saying, by the way, there's this prayer that the East uses that I want you to use in the devotion of the Sacred Heart. Anyway, okay. Any insights on that, Mother? Any filterless comments that I could laugh at?
I had one, but then it was gone. No, it's just gone. I'm sorry. Oh, no. Okay. You know what it was? It's not an insight. It's something I'm salty about. I'm salty about how underplayed Anna is in this feast. It's really frustrating. Like, the day after the feast, we celebrate the Synaxis of Simeon and Anna, which is also your birthday. That's fun.
Yep.
And on the Synaxis of Simeon and Anna, we basically just sing about Simeon, and Anna doesn't get much of anything, and I'm salty about that. That's what I want to say. So there you go.
I think you should be. And I'll tell you why we are trying to change that in a very practical way in our parish.
Oh. I didn't expect any fruit to come of this. It's great.
Your saltiness has borne fruit. The way you salt the earth is not effective, and it will still bear fruit.
I'm salting the earth, and it's bringing forth figs.
Yeah.
That was so dumb.
So shout out. Shout out to whoever told me this.
I'm going to pull up shout outs.
Okay. Shout out to whoever told me this, because I forget who it was. So you did a good job of remaining anonymous by talking to a forgetful priest. But I was saying, as you know, we have a parishioner. This is public enough, I can say it. So our Libby in our parish, our wonderful Libby, is discerning a very unique... We've told our whole parish. I'll ask her before this book goes out.
Okay.
So Libby is discerning a unique vocation that's going to involve poverty, chastity, and obedience in a unique way. So she's going to keep her job. She has a doctorate in moral theology. She's incredibly bright. As I say all the time, you are the favorite at the Roman Catholic Seminary here. She's a professor at the Roman Seminary in Camarillo, California. The students love her. The professors love her. The Archbishop loves her. Anyway, she's incredible. So, and she's borne a lot of fruit, not only in teaching moral theology, but just in being able to be a wonderful layperson that that gives insights into life for seminarians. Mm-hmm. And they see her as a mentor. They see her as a role model. They see her as someone they can ask any question to, not just about moral theology.
It's also super helpful on a human level for seminarians to be formed around a beautiful woman. Like, that's just so helpful.
Yes. She is amazing in every way, including she's a very pretty girl. I think that is, and because she's very mature, mm-hmm, in that way, so she can understand.
She has fantastic boundaries.
She won't let boundaries be crossed on their side, especially if like we were warned when we were young. It happens less and less now they get older. But basically, my spiritual father said, some women are going to ask for spiritual direction just because they want a date, and he didn't mean anything like uber romantic. They just mm-hmm literally want to sit and talk with a man around their age.
Oh, fascinating. You know?
He said, just be careful of that. Careful of that, and make sure that you stay on topic, and make sure that if you sense that that's what's happening, then just, I mean, they're not being malicious. They're not trying to drag mm-hmm me out of the priesthood or any bad. What they're doing is they want to talk to someone around their age who is just fun to talk to.
And they don't even realize that themselves.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I don't think there's malice at all in most of this. So Libby, and then at this parish, like, people are already calling her mom. Mm-hmm. We have every single man is asking for like dating advice from her. you know, I ask her for advice on many things, even though she's my spiritual daughter.
Not dating advice.
She's just, no, exactly. thanks for that clarification, mother. So she's just an amazing, amazing woman in every way. And so we've been looking for, as she discerns this, there has to be a certain blessing from the church to live out any of these vocations well. And so we've been looking for kind of examples, you see where this is going now, examples of people who have lived unique vocations in the church that she could emulate, ask for intercession. And I was telling someone, I said, well, that we have the Stylites, we have Mary of Egypt.
Oh, I see where it's going now.
Exploding. So you have all these examples, and then I'm giving all these examples, like Stylites, Mary of Egypt, whatever, and somebody just says, like, Anna. I was like, yes. Now, Anna mm-hmm was a widow, and Libby's not a widow, but there is this order of widows in the church that's very ancient. But the fact that Anna lived a life of fasting, and she was always near the temple. I love the fact that basically it seems that Simeon was told, he was told that you're not going to die until you see the Messiah. And the Spirit basically said, hey, go to the temple. He's mm-hmm there. The Messiah is now there. You've been waiting for this for a long time. Whereas it says of Anna, she was just always in the temple. So God didn't have to tell her to go to the temple. She was already there. So mm-hmm, and she kind of came upon this, the fact that the Messiah was now back in the temple. God is back in the temple. So there's something beautiful about her consistency, her perseverance, her life for years, just being in the temple, fasting, praying, things like this. And I thought maybe Anna is going to be a beautiful intercessor and one of the examples where Libby can step into an already existing tradition of someone who is not living one of the typical vocations, but also has a blessing from the church to live that out. So now it's just, the blessing is just from me as her spiritual father, but we're hoping to expand that more widely within, you know, other aspects of the church to give her support and allow her to support them as well.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So your saltiness is maybe assuaged a bit.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. It's good to know that Anna's appreciated.
Yes, at least in our circles here, we're trying to appreciate her more at least. All right. So, Mother, I would love to do, as now a half an hour in, I would love to do the... get some insights from you and like allow our conversation to spark in the brains of our listeners more creative almsgiving. So mm-hmm basically, I want to couch this and say this is not tithing. So basically, it's very important that we discern how much money our Lord asks us based upon how much we make to give to others. So mm-hmm as I think I've said before, my guidance I usually give to people, and I got this from others, is you discern a percentage and you assume that 10% of your gross income is the norm. And that's a scriptural mandate. not a mandate, a scriptural mandate. It was in the Old Testament. Now it's a scriptural suggestion. So we have this. So if you can give 10%, like I can, thank God, that's great. You give 10% of your gross income to somebody else. But whatever you do, if you cannot give 10%, then discern prayerfully and in dialogue with mentors, et cetera, discern a percentage of your income that you can give that is a strain. It is a yoke. It is a burden. But at the same time, it's a responsible amount that you can take from what you're giving to your family and to your livelihood to those in need. So basically, take that percentage, cut it in half. So say it's 10. You cut it in half. You give half of that to your parish, because your parish is where heaven meets earth for you and your family. It is where you are grounded, where you receive the sacraments, where you have leadership. So basically, I give 5% to St. Mary's here. And then the other half you give to anything else. So you can donate to Focus. You can give to your local homeless shelter. You can have, other even creative ways of using that tithe. But the tithe is a discerned amount that you always give away. I'd like to couch almsgiving as being above and beyond that, because almsgiving we intensify during the fasts. We intensify prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. So for instance, one of the examples I already gave in the Mother podcast was this woman who asked about almsgiving in the fast, and so she decided that her almsgiving was going to be her time. So she would give time and attention to anybody who, in their loneliness, or just because they liked her, or just had some free time, wanted to go sit in her kitchen while she was a mom with the kids, and just had tea with her. And it was such a beautiful, beautiful almsgiving. Another example that I want to share to get your brain going, Mother, is one that I heard. I was one time sitting in a this Amazon delivery driver is sprinting up the church walk. Anyway, I was sitting in a cigar bar, and there was this very wealthy man I happened to be sitting next to. This is in Denver, and we got into at first, like, he was literally so wealthy that he, his job was in New York City, but he wanted to live in Denver because he liked, that's where his friends were. So he would fly like 3 to 5 days a week from Denver to New York to work. Like, and that's how wealthy he was. Yeah. Yeah.
That's so insane.
He would do this. And but we got talking about, because I'm a priest, and I love this about being a priest. You bring out the best in people, in a sense. And he got talking about some creative charity that he did. And I was brilliant. I went from judging him probably too harshly to being like, this man has actually put a lot of thought into this. So basically what he does is he goes to run down motels, like the one that you're my friend John runs in Denver, right?
Yeah.
Like just the most rundown hotels. And basically what he said was motels. So he says, if you're a single mother, a single homeless mother with 3 kids, you're not going to be standing out on the street corner begging for money. Mm-hmm. You're going to be trying to find help from the system, from friends, from family. And he says, and basically you're going to be begging motel managers to let you stay an extra night. And that happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Can we stay an extra night? Can we stay an extra night? And so you're not bringing the money. So what he does is he goes and he makes relationships with motel managers. Mm-hmm. And he says, basically, I am going to fund, he had a nonprofit, I'm going to fund extra nights for people that you as the manager discern could actually use it. And then he said, then he built up relationships with, for him, it was just pizza parlors. With pizza parlors, basically, because I know, because I worked in a pizza parlor for a while, you make a bunch of dough because that's to rise. So at the end of the night, you always have extra dough. There's always dough left over because you just misjudge, but you don't want to run out. So you always make more than you need to. So at the end of the night, a lot of this gets thrown away. I've thrown away so much pizza dough that's risen, in my life when I was young and working in a pizza parlor. So like you have all this risen dough. So basically he makes relationships with the managers, the night managers of pizza parlors, and says, I will pay you to throw some, tomato sauce and cheese on some of these, unused pizza dough, and then put it through the oven before the time closes. And I will send someone over to pick it up. And then I will go to those same motels and I will ask the manager, you know, where are the rooms where people are probably really needy? Hmm. And he goes and knocks on the door and, you know, someone from the inside, you know, probably worried about who it is. Who is it? And he goes, my name is whatever. And I'm just here with some free pizza. I talked to the manager and he says, you may want some. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
That's amazing. I love this man. I want to meet him now. Have I met him?
He wasn't much of a friend, and he lives a very messy life. My mom used to say charity. What would she say? She got it from somewhere else. Charity can like make up for a multitude of sins. So something
that's
like that.
That's definitely in the Bible.
Okay, well, she got it from this thing called the Bible. I may put that on my Goodreads reading list.
Charity covers a multitude of sins. Yeah.
There we go. So my mom got it from the Bible.
We say with our apostle next, our veils, we say that the veil covers a multitude of chins. Because it's love covers a multitude of sins.
That is funny. That is really funny. multitude of sins. Yes. So in other words, I think a lot of times we do almsgiving just to like everything to feel better about ourselves. We pray and we fast also to feel better about ourselves. And that's a sin. We do a lot of these things to not feel guilty, to feel better about ourselves. It comes from pride. Again, that's just human weakness. Again, we need to do it anyway. Like to push through because the benefits outweigh the negatives and the detriments. But, It's things like that that I think, and then again, he had money to start a nonprofit and he had money to hire people to do these things. Most people don't have the time to go out in the evening and get a bunch of pizzas and bring it to people in motels. But if you have a family and you can think up creative things like this, bring your family. Now, I will warn you, not everybody you try to offer charity to is going to respond with Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's because there's a mental illness there and they're just not going to respond as expected. Sometimes they're not going to respond because they've been very broken and they've been very taken advantage of. And so they see anybody trying to offer simple charity as someone who's trying to take advantage of them. Or they may even know that people who offer charity sometimes are only doing it for their own benefit, like to feel good about themselves. And they may react that way. Sometimes the devil's in all those things, the devil attacks. But if you can, in a sense, prepare your family for someone who may not be responding as expected, but also one of the things that happened to me when I got that a few times was I realized I'm doing this wrong. Mm-hmm. I am really only doing it for my own benefit, or I'm being too judgmental. In mm-hmm. other words, I ask too many questions before I give them help. You know, that's... You know, there's a place for that if you're in a relationship, but it also can be very, very demeaning mm-hmm. and dehumanizing to be like, to walk up to another adult and say, I'm going to be like your boss and I'm going to ask you what you're going to use this for, or I'm going to give you, you know, something that's very demeaning to who you are as a human being. So we can also learn by getting a bad reaction from the poor and the needy. And that's very important to learn from that. Any thoughts, Mother? I have a few more I can go through.
Sure, yeah, no, I have some thoughts.
Or creative things, please.
I do. Well, most of them just flew right out of my mind. But let's see if I can remember. So I think that something to remember is... Oh, that's what I was going to say. I think there's an important nuance here because acts of charity do just make us feel better. Mm-hmm. And it's not like a feeling better about ourselves in the sense of pride, but when we're actually loving people well, there is a very natural consequence of like feeling better and having consolation. Because when we're doing God's will, like that comes with it, right? Mm-hmm. So I also don't want to dissuade people of, well, if you feel good after doing charity, then that means you have the wrong motivation. Like,
good call.
So there's, there's that as well. You know, similar to just like you have a good edifying conversation with a friend and you feel really rejuvenated after, because that's what happens when we're doing things that are building up the kingdom, right? There's a life-giving aspect to it. So,
it's like the principle of double effect. When you have double effect, you have a good and a negative happening together. And in moral theology, you have to discern, is the good going to outweigh the negative without, you know, obviously any objective moral evil being done? So, but this is like, the way I'm hearing what you're saying and a practical way of looking at it would be, when I do this thing, do I rejoice more in their good feeling they're getting by having food or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Am I thinking more of their good than I am of the good that comes to me? And that's the kind of be the principal effect. Like I'm feeling good about this, but as long as I'm more concerned with their feeling good about it or mm-hmm. they're being helped, then it's fine.
Like I feel good because they feel good.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not I feel good because I've done good to them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I've talked about this a lot in recent episodes, but I'm really just coming to realize more and more how deeply people desire connection and relationship. Mm-hmm. And I really think that's what all of our almsgiving needs to work towards, is to helping people experience connection and relationship and being seen. I love the way that this man went about it that you're talking about. You know, I've done things even when I didn't have, I now have, thanks to like just generous donors, I have Fotina funds that I can use for things like this. But even when I was a missionary getting $200 a month and didn't really have much money, I could sometimes just buy like kind of a cheaper bouquet of flowers at Walmart or something. And then I've done this before where I would take them to a hospital and just ask them to give it to someone who's been there a while who like doesn't get visitors, you know, and basically just comforting the lonely in that way. I would really encourage people to pray with the spiritual and corporal works of mercy and also to pray with Matthew 25 about the last judgment and what will be judged on, which is what we Matthew 25 is the passage that we use in discerning how to use our Fotina funds, you know, but if you know that someone feels lonely and doesn't get a lot of visitors, then writing just a little card or a postcard or something like that and sending it to them, that only costs, you know, the cost of a stamp. Like it's not an expensive thing to do that. And it can really make such a difference in someone's day. And spending time with someone, visiting, if you have a family, visiting nursing homes, like older people just love to have kids around, right? and often they're not being visited by their own grandkids or their own kids, or they don't have kids or grandkids. And so I don't know. I would really encourage people to pray with, how do I make connection and how do I help people to feel seen? Because I think that's a lot more important than spending money and sending gifts and things like that. I think the gifts are only important in as much as they're gifts that help people to feel seen. You know, like the more particular the gift can be, I think the better.
Here's an idea that I had that mm-hmm. was kind of based upon another idea. But I preached on this when we heard Matthew 25 last Sunday. Hmm. And I thought, I wanted to give my people some creative almsgiving ideas. And I thought, because I, as a priest, and I hope all priests get this, we all, like kids love drawing us pictures. They mm-hmm. do it for mom and dad, but they also do it for us. Cause like they see us all the time and so we get so many pictures of us celebrating liturgy or us praying with the cross. I think
that's like, just priests.
Yeah, us being a priest. I'm sure you do too, as a nun.
But
there's something that you get, you know, a kid, that's what they have. That's, they have time and they have talent and that's what they give. So I thought, it's so oftentimes that you'll hear somebody say, if you see the same person on the corner, ask their name. You know, just at some point, ask their name so that when you drive by, you can actually roll down your window, and whether you give them something or not, you can just have a simple greeting.
But if this your kid draws a picture for them and writes their name on it.
Once you learn the name.
Oh, that's beautiful. Have
your kid draw a picture of them with, and put their name on, like put the person's name on it.
Yeah.
And this came because I'm trying to think up ways of doing almsgiving towards beauty. Like LA, parts of LA are so ugly. Mm-hmm. They're so ugly. I'm sure I've said this before. They're so ugly. Like some people live in just utter ugliness in Los Angeles. Los Angeles is one of the most beautiful places in the world, except for this. You know, the nature and the plants, the animals, the ocean, the rivers. Like, it is an amazingly, amazingly beautiful area, Southern California. But because of that, we have all these people that have moved here, and then for whatever reason, because of the weather and everything, there's an immense homeless population, and it's just, you see, just, it's so messy. There's no beauty, and trying to like do a ministry of beauty. So those two things get together in my mind thinking, learn the person's name, which I, you know, many people say that, but also why not draw a picture? But again, I will give the warning to parents. It's beautiful, but once you've learned the name, you're pretty much guaranteed that they're going to be friendly enough to give a name and therefore probably friendly enough to receive a gift like this. But some people, just because of mental illness or brokenness or whatever, just may not receive it as is intended. So just be ready for that. But usually if you've got someone's name, they're going to be more ready to do that. And it's such a good thing to get your kids to understand that you don't need to throw money at the situation. You can actually, like you said, mother, let them be seen, learn their name. In a way that the mom or the dad are always in control because you're in the car or whatever, so there's a safety there. But you just you have them draw a picture of them. Maybe have the kids do what kids do. You know, don't overthink it. But have the kid write the person's name on there because they probably never get that, and it is a little beautiful thing to do to improve the beauty of their life as well.
I love that. I remember when I was in college, this guy. I went on a date. This was the second best date of my life. Such a good date. So he tells me, he's like, I'm just going to surprise you with where we're going. And I'm like, great. I love surprises. This is already just amazing. And he's like, wear comfortable shoes and warm clothes. And I said, okay. So, and I'm like, great, we're going for a hike or something. I love hiking. And he picks me up and he takes me to 16th Street Mall. And I'm so annoyed. I'm so annoyed because I'm like, this is so cliche. Any of you who are familiar with Denver know that like 16th Street Mall is just such a cliche place to go on a date. And I'm not about cliches and I'm really annoyed, right? And then we walk into McDonald's and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You are not taking me to McDonald's on our first date. And then he buys like 20 of the dollar cheeseburgers or dollar hamburgers or something. He's like, I thought we could just walk along 16th Street Mall and like feed people who are hungry. And I'm like, my heart is a puddle on the floor. And he's like, this is probably really cheesy. And I was like, I love you. and so we did. And it was nice to like stop and ask people their names and give them a burger and things like that. Yeah, again, like that's not something that everyone can do. And then we went and got coffee at Paris on the Platte, and it was really lovely. But
rest in peace, Paris on the Platte.
I know.
It was such a fun coffee shop.
It was so fun.
But it closed. So I also want to say before we're done, and I hesitate to say this because I don't know the history of this app. I don't know who makes it. I don't know what their ideology is. But there is an app that a friend put me onto, and it's called Too Good To Go. T-O-O, good to go. So T-O-O, good, T-O, go. And basically, I think the impression I get is that this app allows you in your vicinity, so it's a locations-based app, it allows businesses to sell leftover food or excess food or whatever they have for really, really cheap. So you can get, it's like that. At the end of the night, you may get a pizza place that says, we need to charge for the sauce and the cheese, but we're going to charge, you know, wholesale, and we're going to do it at cost, and we're going to basically alert people that may be hungry or they just want a really cheap meal that they can come to us. And so like I type it in here in Sherman Oaks right now, I can see I'd show it up again. So there is at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like about 10 to 12 places that are all now offering meals or food for under $6. Hmm. And I have not used it much, so I don't know much about it. But if you, it's another way of saying, if you, because I mean, I used to do this when I was in Denver with Starbucks. I'd go to Starbucks as they were closing and I would ask for any leftover food. Now, Starbucks, the managers knew that they didn't want to get sued. So I would literally bring my own saran wrap and I would unwrap the pastries from the wrapping that said it was from Starbucks, or the sandwiches from what it said it was Starbucks, and then I would just wrap it in my own thing so they couldn't get sued if somebody got sick. Mm-hmm. But these places are like doing this for this reason, and so I'm sure there's, you know, liability's been lessened and things like that. But you can go and basically get some cheaper food and then give that out, especially if you have the availability to do that late at night. I know the CFRs in New York City, they do what's called midnight runs. Like midnight is a time when many of the homeless are kind of settling in for the night and they're finding a place. And if you can walk around, stay safe, stay public, but, you know, offer food. Because one thing I realized about Starbucks was most of the homeless, they want and need protein. So mm-hmm. I'm throwing out all these pastries, but the pastry is just pure carbs. It's not healthy at all. So some of these places you can do this and you actually get protein, good protein. Also, one thing to be wary of the homeless, just many homeless don't have very good teeth. It's just part of the life mm-hmm. on the street. You don't have good dental care. So like things like apples are not good for the homeless. Yeah. Things that are good for the homeless are hard-boiled eggs, because mm-hmm. hard-boiled eggs are soft and they're full protein. Yeah. And you can keep them for a bit, you know. So anyway, these are the things you learn as you go to keep in mind, but the creative ways of doing that. And this app, again, Too Good To Go, may be a help towards that end. And please email us or put on social media if you know any other apps or any other ways of doing something similar. This is the only one I know. I haven't done a lot of research, but only one I know. But it's a great idea to allow businesses to end food waste and to be able to use, especially get protein to those who need it.
I also, when I was at Simple House, going back to the relationship piece, like one of the things I really loved about a Simple House of Saints Francis and Alphonsus, if any of you are in the Washington, D.C. or Kansas City area, you should definitely reach out to Simple House and see what volunteer opportunities they have, because doing ministry with them is just really amazing. But something I loved about being with them was it was very much friendship evangelization, like really just growing in relationship with people. And so very rarely did we bring food to people. It was much more often that we would like take someone out to lunch and sit and eat with them and get to know them and so on and so forth. And I realized that opportunity isn't often present. And I would certainly caution, like, just women should not do that alone, right? Like, even a pair of women shouldn't do that, probably. don't do that unless you have a guy with you. But yeah, just like, I don't know, just don't just like throw things in people's faces, like actually ask their name and get to, and it's uncomfortable and that's fine. But yeah, I don't know.
And also, no, you're right, 100%. Another thing that just made me think of is if you live in a city and you have to walk from a restaurant to your car, a lot of times the homeless will ask for your take-home box, like if you're mm-hmm. carrying a take-home box. So just always get food, like always get a take-home box. Like don't leave food on the table, because even if it's just a bunch of fries, mm-hmm. even if you're going to throw it away when you get home, like still take it, because if you're in a situation where you might run into somebody mm-hmm. homeless, like a box of fries, even though it is just pure carbs and starch, like that may, you know, let someone go to sleep not hungry that night, you know, mm-hmm. and it's no extra cost to you. It's just, you know, something. So I know a lot of people just leave their food because they know they're not going to eat it, even if it's leftovers, but like take it with you. If there's any chance of seeing someone, even as you drive and you pull up and say,
yeah, no, that's a good point.
I have my leftovers. You know, some people may be offended by that, but I got asked a lot in Denver. They saw me carrying a leftovers box and they mm-hmm. asked, can I have that leftovers? Like, absolutely, you know, yeah. absolutely. Mm-hmm. And feel free to say no too, of course, if you want them, say no. But they say, no, I'm sorry, I'm saving this for my meal tomorrow, you know. But anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else, Mother, to close us out?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, thank you all for listening. Please do share with us any insights or additional ways of creative almsgiving, because I love, people get quite inspired by these things, and it's, and almost all of us say, especially during Lent, almost all of us say, I want to do more charity work. I want to do more almsgiving. That's like something that I've never heard of. Oh, I'm doing enough almsgiving.
I have something I want to say. I was going to say this a long time ago and I forgot until this moment. Also remembering that almsgiving doesn't only apply to the homeless, and it doesn't only apply to lonely people in your parish. It also very much applies to people in your family. Mm-hmm. And I love my sisters so much here at the monastery. Anyone who's like been around us knows that we love each other and we genuinely enjoy time together. And, but we can get so busy and caught up in our life that we often just forget to give each other time. And so I have, at different points during fasting periods, like been really intentional about, especially because I often do my communications fast where I'm not having personal electronic communication, and that frees me up to be more present to the people in front of me. And so I've at times during fasting periods been like, each week of this fasting period, I'm going to intentionally spend one-on-one time with one of the nuns. And I've often shared that with spiritual directees as something to do with like one-on-one time with their kids or with their spouse or with siblings or whatever. And they've always brought that back to me as something that was really fruitful. So giving of your time, not just to those who are in this material poverty, but the people in your own family, like that loneliness and that ache for relationship is all over the place. It's like, I have that ache for relationship and the ache to be seen, right? And you're so good at that, Father Michael. Father Boniface is so good at that. My sisters are so good at that. Like, yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you. Thank you. Beautiful. Another thing that just popped into mind when you were saying that is just a beautiful experience I had. And this is only for priests, so any priests that are listening. And I know most of us are really, really busy, but I have had three amazing experiences in the past, like 2 months, where I've been on the phone with somebody or texting somebody and they realize they haven't been to confession in a while. And so they're just kind of venting about how hard it is, especially all three of them were parents. And they basically said, just, it's really hard with confession times to like get the kids and going. And it just makes that really hard. And all three times, just the spirit in the moment gave me the time to go to them. And so I would literally just drive to somebody's home and I would hear their confessions there. And it's a great ministry of your time. Like, even if you're in between things, or you say, if you haven't been to confession a while and you have kids at home, like, let's even in the next 3 weeks, I will try to find a time in between things where I'm driving here or driving there to go and meet you there. Or like, even if like, if you bring your kids to the mall or to the zoo, like I'll go to the mall or to the zoo where you can keep an eye on your kids while we sit at a table and do confession. Like, I know that's not the ideal. The ideal is in front of an icon and all those things, but like that there's still the ability that a priest has to go out of his way to, and again, 3 times in the past 2 months, and it's been so fruitful just to offer that. What do you call it? A traveling doctor or does house calls, you know, it's like you do house calls for spiritual healing. So,
I really, really love that. That's beautiful. Thanks.
Creative ways of almsgiving is a beautiful thing. Okay. All right. Thank you, listeners. Thank you for finding us however you did. And we are on all the platforms, I believe, now. We are also on social media where you can share the episodes that you like. And we really appreciate that because that's how the spirit works nowadays, is over social media, to hopefully give people hope, information, access to the Byzantine Church, whatever it may be that our podcast does. So please share away. We also have a nonprofit called Fotina that allows us to continue doing this form of evangelization. It also allows us to support other people doing similar forms of evangelization. It also lets us tie it to the church. We give 10% to the church, whether it's our eparchies or our parish's monastery. We also then give 20% to the poor. So it allows us to do creative almsgiving as well. And so you're, in a sense, supporting creative almsgiving if you're able to support our nonprofit. You can do that through our Patreon. Which allows various benefits for different levels of monthly giving. So please check that out. Just go to Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Look up What God Is Not. We also have a Fotina website, Fotina, P-H-O-T-I-N-A.org. And you can, on that website, you can do online giving, or you can find the address to send the checks to the monastery in Ohio, where they will be deposited and the donation made. One of the levels of our Patreon is getting a shout out on the podcast. So we are gradually going through all of you who are so generous with us. We're trying to do 5 every episode until we get caught up, and then we'll just announce the new ones. But Mother, do you have 5 more in front of you?
Yeah. After these 5, we're down to 36. Nice. So we're getting caught up. So Genevieve A from California, Andrew D from Georgia, Upstream. This one's just, it just says Upstream. There's no address, no
name. That's their gangster name. There's,
okay, so Upstream. Thank you for your support. Justine S. from Ontario. Is it Ontario or Ontario?
Ontario.
Ontario.
At least the one in Canada.
This is Canada. I'm talking about Canada. Yeah. And then Benjamin F. from Pennsylvania. So it's really fun to see what a spattering across. Well, across the world too, right? I'm looking at one coming up that's from Spain. And we've had
some
from Australia and some from the United Kingdom. Anyways, yeah.
I'm sure there's a way that we can actually, there's they make a map. I'm sure Buzzsprout does that, makes a map so you can see
the numbers
from each country and things like that. So that would be
fascinating. Well, Buzzsprout does. I'm sure Patreon does.
Okay. Oh yeah, that's right. This is Patreon. Okay, thank you. We are on Goodreads. So we have a Goodreads page where I'll be adding the Bible of Jesus Christ to my Goodreads, which I obviously do not read enough. So yeah, I think that's everything.
I think that's close enough or whatever.
Prayer intentions. I will ask you to pray. One of these families that I went to go visit, and I was able to hear confessions. I heard their son's first confession, which was beautiful. Aww. And then it was so beautiful because I heard their son's first confession. And then the best thing in the world for their son to see was that mom and dad both came out to confession afterwards, you know? And it was good for him to see, going there, it's unique to have a priest come into your home to hear a confession, but then have mom and dad do it as well. It was just really beautiful. Anyway, they have a baby due on Friday. So I will have you pray for this family. I'm not going to say their name just because I don't know, but just pray for this family. And, this will be probably 3 weeks. The baby will be 3 weeks old when this one comes out, but, please do pray for this family and their beautiful growing family that is so they put Christ first in such an immense way. And it's really beautiful that they're that witness to their kids. Thank you.
Okay. I'll ask for prayers for my friend Father Nathaniel, because I just saw him this week and I just love that man with my whole heart. He's so dear. So childlike and guileless and just like his namesake and my namesake. And anyways, so pray for Father Nathaniel. He's a Benedictine.
All right, Mother, thank you. Thank you for coming on, even though you have a migraine.
Thank you. Thanks for pinch hitting and taking the...
Of course. Episode. Yeah, listener, I got a text this morning saying, I have a migraine. Can you take this one? And I love that. You're like, because I know you can do that. I'm like, I'll figure it out. Absolutely.
Which the reverse can never happen. I cannot be told an hour before recording that it's going to be my topic all of a sudden. But you're so good at that. So thank you.
I think honestly that can be a learned thing if you just try it a time or two.
Well, please don't try to make me learn it.
I will not. I will encourage you to decide to do that on your own at some point if you like.
No. Okay. I love you. Can you please give us a blessing?
May the Lord bless you and keep you, cause his face to shine upon you, have mercy on you. May you find ever-increasing thanksgiving and praise in the fact that God became one of us, all that was looked forward to for thousands of years before the incarnate Son. God made himself accessible to us, and he is a fulfillment of all desire and all of the anticipation and all of our needs, all of our wants, all find their fulfillment in the God-man, Jesus Christ. May you grow in knowledge of that, desire for that, love of that, as this great pilgrimage of life goes on. May you also truly see the needy around you. May our Lord open your eyes and my eyes to those who we can reveal the kingdom of God, reveal the presence of God, reveal the communion of the saints and the communion with Jesus Christ too, in both ways that are guided by the church, but also ways that are creative when our Lord inspires us to love in unique ways, and to even surprise those who receive these great loves, and that they may always, in these ways that we give alms, Lord, may they always see you and not only us. And maybe not us at all, but always you, Lord, and may turn to you and find their true consolation in you, O Lord, through our work, through our hands. And may all of those listening receive this blessing, even to the salvation of your soul. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Amen.